This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning, folks. This is the morning run on the 30th of May 2019 at 6 a.m. in the morning. You're with Julian Ng, Wong Xiaoning and Sharis Abdullah. How are you guys this morning?
Good, thank you.
Good. Yeah, it's good. Thursday already. Time really flies.
Excellent. And as per usual, this hour of the day, we usually talk about things that are the lighter side of business, sometimes not so light.
That's right.
Actually. Yeah. So what have we got today, guys?
Okay, well, Julian and Xiaoning, it's the final week of Ramadan, how time has flown. Time flies. So next week is Raya, and we've got some stats of how much food we could have been put in good use during the whole time we had Ramadan Bazaar. So let's discuss about that.
Yeah, and I've got some data on the gig economy. I mean, it's the latest thing, right? Joining the gig economy. And people are attracted to it, you know, flexi hours, you can be your own little mini boss. But did you know that you could be exploited actually by these companies and leaving you with a very small safety net?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, some pitfalls to watch out for in the gig economy. And also recently we interviewed Wan Sai Fu Wan Jan, who's the PTPT and chairman, which, as you know, is saddled with 40 billion ringgit of debts. And coming up next, we asked the question of whether we can learn from some ideas to deal with the student loan problem in the US. So stay tuned for that. And if you've got any comments, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'd love to hear from you. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Bang a Gong and Get It On by T-Rex. You're with The Morning Run at this 6 a.m. hour. Julian Ng, Wong Xiaoning and Sharis Abdullah with you. Now, the US student loan debt is over $1 trillion, which is way more than the 40 billion ringgit that we owe to PTPTN. And the US is, of course, the world's largest economy. Now, student debt has also become a key 2020 presidential election campaign, and Donald Trump has pledged to fix the student debt problem. And the Financial Times actually asks its readers on how to solve this huge $1 trillion problem, $1 trillion question.
That's right. And I think it's not just about the US, isn't it? I mean, as you mentioned, Wan Sai Fu Wan Jan was here in BFM last week.
Just
a few days ago to speak about student loan debt. So that's a problem for us. But I don't know if you guys know, PTPTN has just opened a public consultation just beginning... mid this month, and then it's going to go on for a month till mid next month.
Yeah, it's asking the members of public to come up with some solutions, right, regarding how to resolve this $40 billion debt, right, Julian?
The independent advisory panel has come up with about 10 ideas as a result of that public consultation. And to me, they are like one big idea. I call it the 10 shades of grey, right? Right. From forgiveness to deferment to full enforcement. So it's a mixed match of all that. And the result, the decision actually from PTPTN as to what to do will come out on June 13th, I think.
Okay.
So going back to the Financial Times, right? Solving, you know, the student loan problem. Some of these ideas include have the old debtors pay for the debt of younger students, debt repayments proportional to your income, which is in the one of the 10 ideas as well, and having the debt burden being funded by tax collection, higher taxes. Do you guys think?
Higher tax collection. That's interesting. But I'm looking at... There's other suggestions here. I'm looking at some. One of it is focus on poorer schools. I think correct me if I'm wrong, but I think one of the things that Wan Sai Fu Wan Jan was saying was that it's the data that they collect. It's not enough. And one of the things is about the income level of those new fresh graduates. And it says here focus on poorer schools, but the focus on poorer students as well. If there is a way that they could come up and declare their income and make it obligatory since you signed the contract, and if you can't pay it, make it a responsibility to be out there and be responsible and declare and see what PTPTN could do about it.
I think another interesting suggestion in this FT article is to basically make degrees shorter.
Right,
because then your your fees.
A lot of people would be happy about that.
Yes.
Less time in the classroom.
No, some degrees are very long. I mean, okay.
Architecture, doctorate.
Yeah, like medicine. Yeah, yeah, architecture 6 years, medicine 6 years. I understand some degrees may require that duration.
You don't want to go to a physician or a surgeon who only had 2 years of degree studies, right?
Yeah,
you
but know, maybe
that'd be
some.
Quite dangerous.
I shouldn't say this. Maybe some social studies or art programs could be like, let's say in Australia, they're 4 years. It could be 3 years. Would that be better? Even in Malaysia?
Because, I think one of the things that this article highlights as well is that not all degrees create equal sort of income.
I mean,
some degrees, they pay more than, they provide higher income.
I mean, they say that
other
in this
degrees,
article,
right?
It says that some American public universities give the illusion to students that when they graduate with a certain degree, they will earn a lot more. But when they really do go out onto the job force, they find out that, oh, look, you know, I earn maybe just only half what I thought I could earn.
Yeah, times have changed a lot, actually.
Yeah,
a degree doesn't guarantee a good job.
Exactly, in these tough times. So maybe some relook in terms of how long degrees should be.
But I don't know whether you can actually shorten the thing and solve your debt problem, because this requires a lot of studies. It's not something that can be made overnight. It's not
a decision that
can be done. And in the meantime, you will still have to service those loans. The other one is make university free. Now, this might sound very simple, but actually it's not, because who's going to pay for that, right? Nothing is free. Someone has to pay for it. And if you want good quality education, that doesn't come for free. So to me, this really implies that you've got to raise money from somewhere, and that means taxes.
Yes, unfortunately. I mean, if you look at some of the Scandinavian models where education is free, like in Norway or Finland or Sweden, these countries, the average tax rate is 50 to 60%, right? Which allows for these countries to have a very generous social service program. But in Malaysia, our average tax rate is much lower, in
very
the 20s.
Low.
So how can we make that, you know, get over? I mean, how can we afford free education? That's the question mark.
Yeah, tax rate as well as our income level. I mean, that goes hand in hand, isn't it? I mean, if we've reached to a point where we have high income, then there is a chance. But at the moment, we're still working on that.
You can tax the richer people, which would make them go up in arms, as opposed to those people in the Scandinavian countries who are very happy to pay the taxes. Research has shown, surveys have shown that they're actually not too bad in paying the taxes, right? But over here, the moment you start raising the marginal taxes, the rich would find ways to avoid such taxes because they have the resources too. So this becomes a very thorny problem. On one hand, you need educational capital to secure the future of the country. But on the other hand, you need funding, which the rich people would be quite reluctant to pay for.
Yeah, they'll go up in arms. But it's ironic because, I mean, in America, actually, recently with Trump in power, the rich have been taxed less.
Yes.
Due to his initiatives, right? So I guess it depends on the model that you want to use. But at the end of the day, maybe it's the whole education system that needs to be relooked. I don't know. I mean, in Malaysia, for example, I've listened to this talk by Tan Sri Musa Hitam, who said that maybe our issue is that we just have too many graduates. We don't need so many university graduates. We should relook at the education system and even consider things like vocational or technical colleges where fees are lower. And in a way, you're kind of broadening the economy. You're not just creating graduates, but you're creating like technical jobs. Mm. And it's true because we need to be more productive, right? Especially
productive.
In the tech sector, electronic sector.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. There are business models like Udacity, for example, which trains people, skips the degree totally and trains people directly for the job market. You're almost guaranteed a job from the tech giants, right, in the
US.
It's
very common in Germany, for
Correct.
Example, this model.
And there are other like online courses like Coursera and others, free platforms that you can go to and get certified as well. Very cheaply. So some of these ideas are definitely emerging. If you have any ideas on how to address the education problem, not only in Malaysia, but the world, do let us know, WhatsApp us or tweet us. And we'll be coming back with more discussion. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. And that was The Wire by Haim. You're with Julian, Xiaoning and Sharat Abdullah. Now, gigging and freelancing work is a huge trend right now, and it probably started about 10 years ago when the global financial crisis happened, which made people look for any job they can get their hands on. However, today, the likes of Uber and Lyft has made this gigging economy mainstream, but apparently these gig economy workers are being exploited. making Vox declare that the recession hasn't ended for such workers.
So, I mean, it's a tough one, isn't it? The gig economy, because they are vulnerable in a lot of ways. They don't have a lot of safety net. For an example, we're talking about insurance. We are talking about the cost of running your own business. For an example, running your own car, and also at the same time, just saving for retirement. So all that is not being provided for by the companies that they work.
I mean, this article in Vox says that these people don't have even $400 to cover an emergency bill, right? 58% of these full-time gig workers compared to, let's say, 38% who don't work in a gig economy. I don't have any data in Malaysia, but I wonder whether it's the same situation for, let's say, the full-time Grab drivers or those guys who deliver parcels full-time for, like, Foodpanda or Ninja Van, you know, things like that. But at the end of the day, if you think about it, it's possible that this has happened, because if you look at the model of Uber, it goes back to the model of Uber, right? Which is, or Grab. These companies are essentially currently loss-making. I mean, they're like burning cash like there's no tomorrow. So it's all about reducing their costs and paying their drivers as little as possible. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they don't classify these drivers as full-time employees. They're seen as independent contractors. So they don't have much obligation to these drivers at all.
Yeah, I think that can be said in the wider corporate world as well. Even those who are making a lot of money, because the whole idea of a corporation is to reduce costs and expand margins. And in that sense, there's always this fight between workers and employers, because employers always try to push down their labor costs, right? Which is why unions are relevant, actually. But I think also there is a problem of understanding and misconception here, because when you work with a corporation, you get the feeling that they're providing for your healthcare through insurance and your retirement planning through EPF and so on. The truth of the matter is that they're just giving this to you as a package, which means that all these things that they're giving to you is your total earnings, which means to say that these earnings are much higher than what you would get from, let's say, driving a Grab or driving an Uber, right? You're not getting the same kind of package. And therefore, that solution of driving a Grab car is not a long-term solution. You've got to look for something else. You've got to be able to train yourself for something else so that you can provide for your future as well. Because you when you add it all up, whether you're gigging or freelancing or starting your own business, you've got to look at it from your total package. And from your total package, you can then provide for your own retirement planning and buy your own insurance, right?
Yeah, so I mean, being the word gig just does, I mean, it does come across to me as something short term, and that has always been my understanding of Uber. I mean, or Grab when it first came out, that a lot of it were a temporary measure. I mean, we did see a lot of people who were losing permanent jobs before, and this became sort of like just a quick safety net for them, temporary safety measure before they start looking for something permanent. But one thing, though, I do see is that all these companies like Grab and Uber is that they have a very big, broad base. And one thing is that you want to see whether or not it's possible for them to capitalize those numbers, and which could, you know, just like any big corporation, that's how they could provide insurance and so forth, because it gets cheaper because of the number, sheer number of employees that they have. So with Uber and It's about looking at their work structure. Like now, I mean, you were asking whether or not whether you have any strong data from Grab, and I don't have solid ones as well. But I do know that they do. What's different between Uber and Grab is that they do have facilities like car hire, which is they allow for 50 ringgit you can hire a car. And with that, they cover everything, maintenance services and stuff. So those are areas where they're taking advantage of the scale that they have. So in that, it's just turning or transforming into sort of like a glorified taxi company now in some ways.
Well, some of the initiatives to protect Grab drivers in Malaysia are driven by the government, one of which is to include them in SOXO and also to encourage them to have EPF. But Julian brought up a valid point. Is this meant to be a full-time job? Because at the end of the day, when you're a Grab driver, how much negotiation power do you have with Grab to raise how much they pay you for each ride or per hour in the future, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of an unfair playing ground. And if you're just Grab, and we know Uber shut down in Malaysia, right? They merged. Mm. What are your other options if you don't want to drive Grab?
Hopefully there's Gojek coming in.
Yeah, hopefully there's Gojek.
All right, we're coming up to the 6:30 news. And in the meantime, here's The Passenger by James Bay, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. And that was Saloka Hari Raya by Hail Amir and Uji Rashid. This is just to put you in the Raya mode. Raya is next week, right?
Next week, Wednesday, Julian.
Aha. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So you must be looking forward to that celebration, going back to your kampung.
Yeah, I've lost so much weight. I don't look forward to just putting it back on.
Well, I'm just wondering whether you put it back on every day when you book up, because the Ramadan bazaars are all the rage now. But there is an article coming from the Malay Mail highlighting the copious amounts of wastages happening every day. I mean, 120,000 tons of food go to waste during the Ramadan.
120 elephants.
It's equivalent
120,000 elephants.
343 million packs of medium-sized nasi lemak ayam. Yeah. Shocking,
so,
right?
So I guess that's why I'm losing weight in that sense. I mean, someone's
You're
not
wasting,
buying.
Is it?
Yeah, we're not buying, hence it's putting to waste. So it's a shame.
No, I don't think it's just not buying. It's just buying and throwing things away.
Yeah, okay. I remember those days when the novelty was still there. I remember when I first finished school and we were excited. We had some money and we were able to go and visit all this bazaar Ramadan. And we would, because you're hungry, you tend to buy more than you can eat. And a lot of the times, because your stomach has shrunk because of fasting month, and you just can't eat as much. But I think this is a case of what's happening at the bazaar itself. I mean, whether or not this is a case of people buying and they're not able to finish it and they're wasting food, or is it more those who are at the bazaar not able to sell as much food?
A bit of both, I think.
Yeah. So
I think it's a combination, yes.
Yeah. I haven't, it's sad, but I have not visited the bazaar Ramadan at all this year.
I just went to one yesterday.
You did? Yeah. How's the crowd? Do you think that there's
very
the
crowded, extremely really? Crowded? Still? Yeah. Okay. This is the one in TTDI to the extent that it's causing a jam outside. But Maya Karin has posted some pictures on her Instagram, and it shows has pictures of all the food wastages. So I guess the question is how we can prevent this, right? And yesterday, when we went out, we took our own bags. We refused the plastic bag, but still, there's still a lot of plastic involved in the packaging. And I ate all my food, but I, can't help noticing that there was still a lot of food unsold at about 6 p.m. 6 p.m. You book out at what time? 7:30.
7:20. About 7:30. That's right. It's not just in Ramadan, but there has been other initiatives like Food Bank that we have, right? And I think in this article as well, they are saying that, hey, look, there is a safe sort of safe food
campaign.
What's it called? Save Your Food campaign, which they would like to try and introduce. Perhaps it will be another 10 months from now, which is the next year.
I don't know whether there's two aspects to this. Like you say, one is people don't shop so much, right? Because apparently everyone's going on
not
food
according
apps.
To Julian.
No, I mean, as in like a lot of people are going on the food apps like Panda, Foodpanda, mm-hmm. GrabFood.
Yeah, that's right.
So, and yeah, I can see my neighborhood, all the, these guys whizzing past in their bikes at about 7 o'clock. And I guess they must be delivering all the buka puasa meals. And sometimes I chat with them, because they hang out on this lane. I said, have you been very busy? And yeah, buka puasa is busy time for us. So people have also changed their behavior in terms of how they buy their buka puasa meals. But at the same time, it's also like what Julian said, maybe is it just people making too much food? I mean, these traders, right?
And, they have and not I'm sure adjusted. They're making very good money out of it, which
they do.
Which causes them to prepare more food than they sell, right? Just in case they can sell a bit more and make a few bucks more. But food is not cheap. It's quite expensive, actually. So that becomes very profitable. And the more profits you have, the more you can cook, right?
I guess when the question is, what do you do with the excess food that these traders can't sell? And this article does highlight one important issue, is like whether we can redirect these food to the people who do need them or who can eat them or use them. And at the moment, I think they're just thrown away, which is the saddest part.
Put them in a food bank. That's not a bad idea. Like, yeah, give it to the poor.
That's right. So, I mean, imagine moving forward. Hopefully, there will be a time when, you know, because Ramadan has always been also known as a time of giving as well. We pay our zakat, which is to give and to be distributed. And one way is that, if people are in the mood to give, have that those initiatives going on during those bazaars, saying that, hey, buy your own food. And as well, if you have some extra cash, buy for another one. And those food, by the end of the, you know, if they can't sell, they can't finish it, have it distributed. But looking at the photo as well, there's so much food being distributed, they can't even finish it. Even those who are in need of food, they just stockpile it, and it's still going to waste.
Okay, this is an annual problem that they're going to have. And not only an annual problem, but we see a lot of food wastages in, even in our normal daily lives as well. Yeah. So we need a lot of ideas on how to address this situation. Let us know if you have any thoughts. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be coming back with more discussion. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Julian Xiaoning as well as Sharitz. And we've been talking about food wastages during the Ramadan season. Somebody has WhatsApped in to say, thank you very much, Nadia, to say that apps can be used to save food. In fact, there's this one called O-Free Food, which is made by a Malaysian. You can offer your extra food and get them from others as well. I guess technology does play a part in helping us reduce wastages.
Yeah, and we do have a model out there. Just need to sort of figure out how to, you know, monetize it, or not monetize it,
redirect food to the right people.
That's right.
The underprivileged.
That's right. And also, we got a text from Susan. Maybe DBKL should just issue fewer Ramadan Bazaar licenses. Too many operators lead to food wastages. So that's an idea. They now open their bazaar in Dataran Merdeka. You know, is it bazaar?
Yes.
Or,
yeah, yes. There's right. Food trucks in Dataran Merdeka.
There you go.
Well, it takes two to clap, right? So we as consumers should take some responsibility as well, because if you try to intervene too much, and here is my free market side coming in already. You know, sometimes people call me a socialist, but I have a free market side as well. I mean, if you restrict supply, then the food becomes more expensive. It leads to other problems. I think there should be a free market situation here, and we should make our own decision as consumers, right? If we think that there's too much wastages, then just walk away. Don't buy it.
So in the longer term, these operators will just make less food because they're not making money. Is that your point?
Correct. Or if they want to make more profits, then they got to
lower their cost,
find
lower
an
their
optimum
prices.
Optimum quantity of food to produce.
I don't know if it's that simple. Like you said, the price has gone up, and there are people out there who still depend on Ramadan Bazaar, especially like students, for example, who don't buy food, and they become sort of the victim, I'd say, you know, of this price hike. As, if they don't get volume, I'm just concerned that they just might spike up the price of food.
Correct, and it's also a good income stream for the vendors as well.
Yeah.
It helps with the economy.
It does. Okay, well, moving along, we have also a WhatsApp for Marcus on the student loan. Now, we have to be responsible with our debt. We sign it. We have to honor it. Be it a small amount, now, this is something we have to perhaps instill from young, because it's that, I think it's just that idea of ownership. Once you sign something, it's just good etiquette to just, you know, honoring it, really.
Well, then the question becomes, who funds education? Is education a free good, like defense? Okay, for example, you don't pay for your own defense of the country. The government has to pay for it to buy those F-16 fighter jets or whatever, right? Is education the same thing? Is education a public good?
Or necessity.
A necessity, some kind of a necessity.
But once we
like
get
healthcare,
to,
like okay. healthcare, right?
But once we get to that point, then that becomes a new contract altogether if we want to start giving out free education. I think PTPTN started off with a seed, sort of like seed funding from the government, and hopefully that, you know, people will start paying back and they can sort of pay back for, pay future loans.
Well, Bond Rebel
provide
says,
future loans, sorry.
Whichever student takes a loan to study, he needs to pay it back or so that others are not deprived.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a dicey issue, which is not easily solved, because on one hand, they're very, very poor students. And on the other hand, the country is indebted. So that kind of debt needs to be addressed.
And also another WhatsApp from Nurul. Now, if you want to be part of the gig economy and have flexibility, there will always be some risk. It's not like full-time employment.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, in a way, if you want to have some flexibility and have your own time, which the gig economy does allow you to have, you're not tied in, let's say, from 9 to 5. Right, but that cost, it does come with some costs. Mm.
Yeah, basically, like running your own business.
Yeah, it's like a freelancer.
Every business comes with its risks.
Yeah, and I find that works for some family when one person has a stable and permanent job, and the other one does the whole Uber and Grab. For like, it could be the husband doing Grab, and the wife would probably have a permanent job somewhere, or the other way around. And that way, it gives that flexibility of taking care of the kids, picking them up from school, and so forth, and perhaps even enough to have medical insurance, those who are holding a permanent job. So there is definitely some good in the gig economy, for sure.
Okay, Owen Lead is saying that surely a waste is a complete contradiction in Ramadan. I'm sure that idea is not lost on us, right?
Here.
Ramadan. Okay, we're coming up to the 7 a.m. news, and after that, international business news. In the meantime, here's Heroes by David Bowie, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.